What is up, guys? Welcome back to Season 1, Episode 5 of Millennial Hollywood here on Popcorn Talk. Today's guest has directed many of our favorite TV shows, so don't go too far.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. It's
What is up, guys? Welcome back to Season 1, Episode 5 of Millennial Hollywood here. I'm so happy to be here, and today's guest knows exactly what millennials want to see. He's directed many of our favorite TV shows, including Pretty Little Liars, The Magicians, The Vampire Diaries, and my personal favorite, Shadowhunters.
Yay.
Welcome, Joshua Butler.
Thank you, Dakota. Thank you for having me. This is so much fun.
I'm so happy that you got to come back in.
Yeah, this is great.
We did the Shadowhunters after show, and he's been in here for many times for other of the TV shows like The Magicians. And you came in for Vampire Diaries too, right?
I came in for Vampire Diaries and Limitless.
Oh, okay, awesome.
And and then we did the season finale, mid-season finale together on Shadowhunters. Oh. So that was fun.
And we'll get into that because I can't wait. I'm like, all right, I can't wait for that to come back. And I hope that you get to direct another episode.
Yeah, I know. It seems like, you know, knock on wood, there'll be a season 3. Let's hope.
Yes. I mean, I would think so.
Yes.
I think it's the second... I mean, after Pretty Little Liars goes, I think it'll be like the main show that Freeform has right now.
Yeah, that they're best known for.
Yeah.
I think so too.
That and then Famous in Love is doing really well. That just came out.
Oh, yes, I know. Yeah. I'm really excited. My friend Marlene King. Yes.
Yeah,
she's terrific.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So I want to go ahead and first let's introduce you. Where can we find you all on social media?
Oh, sure. I'm Joshua Butler, and on all social media, I'm the Joshua Butler.
All right.
So that's
the Joshua Butler.
Yeah. It started with a Twitter problem because somebody had taken my name by the time I joined Twitter and tweeted 4 times and then never thought about it again.
Thought about it. And you're like, really?
And I'm like, really? Yeah. And the tweets are almost illegible. If you go to @JoshuaButler, it's kind of funny, actually,
because
they're just like the most silly little tweets that somebody made in 2009.
Wow. And I know that if it's been over 6 months since they've been active, you can like talk to Twitter and take that over. If you ever
at the time I signed up because I signed up in 2012. So at the time I asked and they said no.
Yeah.
I mean, they said, oh, name's taken. So I'm like, okay, well.
And now you got the Joshua Butler everywhere else.
So I'm like, I might as well be consistent. Yeah, exactly. So
that's right. Well, you guys can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at Mr. Dakota T. Jones. You can follow The Popcorn Talk everywhere at The Popcorn Talk. Also, make sure if you're watching us on YouTube, give us a big thumbs up, comment below. We love talking to you guys. But I just want to ask you, okay, so how did you get involved in the business?
Well, it was a lifelong dream. Mm-hmm. I decided when I was an 8-year-old I wanted to be a movie director, so I started making videos. I had a video camera, and I made videos throughout high school and convinced all my classmates to be actors in my movies. I was that guy, you know, who'd be like, you know, asking everybody to be on camera.
Yeah.
So luckily they indulged me. And then I wanted to go to film school from the very beginning. So I applied to USC, and that was the only school I applied to. I just applied to the film school. I got in. I got in also to the early admissions program, so I was able to start college early. So I started at 17, and I did the 4-year undergraduate program, and I did the student film when I was there, and I graduated, and then, you know, did the Hollywood song and dance, just took my student film around, and I wrote scripts, and I was, you know, meeting people and trying to get something going. But my day job was editing. I learned Avid editing at USC, and it turned out to be very lucrative. They needed a lot of editors in Hollywood, so while a lot of my friends were answering phones at Fox for $400 a week, I was actually, you know, doing really well, like doing editing jobs during the days and sort of one-offs, or, you know, they bring me in for 2 weeks at a time or one week at a time to work on various projects. So that was actually how I got my directing break, through editing. I basically found my way into a situation where I re-edited a pilot and basically sort of impressed a bunch of people who hired me to edit the series, and then I negotiated to direct on that show, and then that was where I finally got my break.
That
so
awesome.
Interestingly enough, because I set out to be a movie director, and still working on that, and I have directed some movies, but TV was very, very good to me from the beginning. They gave me my break, and then when I started, of course, TV wasn't really looked at the way it is today. You know, it's gotten in the last 5, 6, 7 years so much more of the credit it deserves in terms of the filmmaking going on in TV.
Definitely.
So it's been an interesting ride.
Wow, that is so awesome. Because I was going to get into that later with you. I was going to ask, like how is one able to go from not being a director to being like the one in charge, like calling the shots. I'm like, that's like a big jump, and you'd have to have like some kind of in or like experience and other things to be able to cross over. So I guess the fact that you were able to edit the pilot so well, they were like, this guy has got an eye for this, and he's able to kind of to display the best moments on screen. He could really bring emotion out of the characters. So that's really awesome. And that does make sense why they would have picked you for that.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's not exactly what I would advise people who are trying to get into the business. I mean, in terms of leverage, I think, and I've said this a lot, your biggest sort of hand to play would be to have original content at your disposal, whether you've written a script or whether you own a piece of property, you know, say a book that you've optioned or some kind, or, you know, you have a friend who wrote a script and you attach yourself to direct it. Those are the more traditional ways, I think, of getting Hollywood to take notice of you. Yeah. In my case, I had a talent for editing that I was able to leverage into directing, but that sometimes might be a harder thing for people to really to know how to evaluate. You know, they do know how to evaluate a good script, but it's hard to evaluate somebody who might be very good at a job that they don't really quite know, you know, what makes somebody good or what makes somebody better than the other person. So
definitely,
you know, just have to be careful about how you position yourself.
Exactly. So, exactly. It's kind of like a fine line because you don't want to do too much of one thing, because then sometimes Hollywood people can kind of pigeonhole you into being like, okay, well, he's a great editor, but you know, but they love to
pigeonhole you.
Exactly. Yes. So it's good that you had that voice to be like, hey, so I'm actually interested in doing this, because most people would just be kind of scared, maybe sit back and be like, well, they like me doing this, they're comfortable with me doing this, I'm just going to stick here.
Right. And but, a lot of people, that's what a lot of people choose to do.
Right.
You know, and some people choose to do it because that's genuinely what they love to do. And
right.
That's great. But if your dreams are bigger, then that can be the temptation to stay with what's familiar and to stay with, because it's very bold. Like a lot of editors and crew members, cinematographers too, assistant directors, production designers, even actors on shows, all want to. Some of them really want the opportunity to direct, and they feel that the longer they're working on a show and the longer they put their creative investment into it, the more they can potentially get that opportunity. So those people have a very interesting choice. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you push for it, how do you push for it? You know, at what point do you say, hey, I want to come back, but I also want to direct an episode? I mean, that's very bold to do. And but there's a strategy in how to do that, you know, and be successful.
Definitely.
But a lot of people have done it. And then, of course, the trick is then to keep that up, to say, okay, well, if you've directed an episode, do you want to continue, say, as an editor or a production designer or an assistant director or a camera operator, or do you want to actually then reinvent yourself and have a new chapter in your life where you're actually a director? And that's a whole set of, you know, processes as well. So, you know, it's really all about what you, I think, envision your future to be and what job in Hollywood makes you the happiest.
Definitely. I love that. That's awesome. And something that I've always wanted to know is whenever, let's say, okay, you get the call like, hey, we want you to direct this episode. What is like the groundwork that you create, or what are your first steps before even stepping onto the set?
Well, homework, you know, I was a school nerd, which at the time, you know, I didn't know that that was actually going to be very helpful. But, you know, the idea of being a good student and studying hard, you learn the skills to do what you need to do, you know, in the situation you just described, because I would basically have to watch every other episode that led up to the one I was directing.
Just binge watch
everything. Yeah, it's like, you're being paid to binge watch. Yeah. So in a way, that's good.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of times I work on shows that are early on in their first seasons, or they don't really have a lot of episodes that are completed. So in those cases, I have to read the scripts. And I usually read the scripts anyway, just to see what the writing style is and the types of things that they like to do on the page, you know, which is what I'm being presented, because I'm not being presented with an episode. I have to go out there and create it.
Right.
You know, so, and then there's a lot of discussions with the showrunners, about the style of the show, you know, what they like, what they prefer, what their pet peeves are, what they think, you know, is working in the show. They give me the lowdown, secretly about the actors, you know, if there's some actors that they have concerns about performance wise, you know, and things they want me to watch out for on set. If there's moments and nuances in the script that they feel that a director might miss, they will tell me those things, and I will dutifully note them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you really do have to, you know, become an expert on the show. And of course, you know, a show like Shadowhunters, you have to go an extra step because there's an entire mythology created. So I was on the Shadows Wiki page.
Whoever you are,
thank you.
Yeah.
Because they were extremely helpful because, you know, like, you know, I'm like, okay, Parabatai. I have to learn what a Parabatai is.
Right.
And then who's the Parabatai on the show? You know, and then I was like, oh, wow, Valentine and Luke. Hmm, interesting. Things like that. And just knowing that played a huge part in the episode I was directing.
Definitely,
you know, and if I didn't know what that meant and how that affected those people,
right.
Just as one of many terms in that show, you know, like the
many
know,
terms,
like Adamus, and you know, then the sort of the mythology of the mortal instruments and the soul sword and everything. It was just like my episode was like, it was almost like a masterclass in Shadowhunters trivia.
It was such a big episode,
and that was my first episode.
Yeah,
so I had to really learn a lot.
Oh my gosh! Like, how long did it take you to kind of get the gist of everything going into Shadowhunters?
Well, the thing is, you really don't have a lot of time.
Right.
I mean, a basic prep for a TV show is about a week and a half. So for me, I got a little bit of a head start, but basically it took me about 2 weeks before I started shooting to really get up to speed on everything.
So you were like, all right, let's go in.
Let's jump in. Exactly. Again, you know, it's so nice. The internet is a great resource.
Definitely.
In those cases, you know.
Yes. So. And so whenever you like go in and you like meet with the actors, do you have a moment where you kind of sit down with everyone, get to know everyone, or are you more like you step in and you're like, all right, let's just go for it?
Well, TV is shot at lightning speed.
That's
as you
true.
May know.
Yeah.
So there's rarely time for rehearsals before the actual day of shooting. The one thing they sometimes do, most of the time I would say, is take a crew lunch either the day or two before we start shooting my episode, and the cast gets together and does a read through of the script.
Okay,
so that's usually the one and only time I'm actually able to see the actors before I'm telling them, you know, what my idea is for the blocking of the scene.
Yeah.
And so we rehearse very quickly. You know, you basically have to block and rehearse scenes in television in 5 minutes or less.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors know that, the good directors know that, and the crew needs it to be quick so that they can just get a jump on lighting and jump on, you know, where, you know, we can set up the camera and,
right.
and what we're doing, you know. So that's why you have to be very efficient. It'd be nice to have if you're rehearsing a stage play, then it's all about, you know, just talking about subtext and objectives and the motivations of all the characters. And most of us just have to do that homework on our own time, and the actors do often just do that. They break down the scenes and they work with their acting coaches, and they at least come to set very prepared.
That's good.
The ones that don't, you know, I won't call them out by name, but the ones that don't really slow everybody down.
Yeah.
And
there has been people in your experience on shows that you've done where you're just like, they haven't quite done the research enough, or they're not quite, their head's not in the game, and you're just trying to pull something out of them that they just are just not there for it.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
But there's also something much more basic. And I'm going to say this to everybody who's listening to this right now, who is an actor who wants to work in Hollywood. Learn your lines.
Yes.
Know them on set.
Definitely.
And I hate to say that that's something that I have to say out loud, but it is something I have to say out loud. Because, yes,
right.
you can't even get into the nuances and the you know, sure, they may have made a wrong choice. But I can work with that.
Yeah.
I can work with something where they're like, they made a wrong choice for the scene, or in my opinion, a wrong choice or choice that is different from, you know, what needs to happen in terms of the story and the character. If the actor has craft, that's something we can deal with. But if you're just literally struggling to get through the scene because you don't know your lines, then it's just a painful process. And everyone knows that the editing room exists, which is unfortunate in some ways, because a lot of them rely on the editing room where they know that they can just, you know,
splice it all together
and make it look fine, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of actors get away with that. But I also think that they also get a reputation for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're aware of the type of person you want to be perceived as being in terms of professionalism, I think that's it's key to not be that person that relies on the editing room to make you look good.
Definitely.
Because you don't even know who's, you know, what the sensibilities are of the people in the editing room.
Right, right. And not only that, but I feel like if you're ever going to get hired again on something else, people could be like, yo, do not hire this person.
Correct.
They do not know their lines. Correct. They always rely on the editing team to edit everything together. Mm-hmm. So that, I love that you said that, because this show, we are trying to educate people on what to do and what to, like, what are the steps taken to get where you need to get. Mm-hmm. And also, I think that's a very basic thing. Learn your lines, guys. It's not that hard.
Yeah, it's not that hard. And be on time.
Right.
And be nice.
Yeah.
I mean, these are very important things, because same thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talented actors who are just not nice to the people on the crew. And I'm not just talking about the ones who are, you know, nice to the producers, but then, you know, rude to the craft service people. You know, it's like, you, as a human being, it's best, you know, it doesn't matter who they are, whether they're the, you know, the studio heads or the people who are working their butts off to get you your you know, your mid-afternoon snack. It's important to be respectful of everyone on a set, because everyone's doing a really, really hard job.
Exactly.
And long hours.
And someone who I think does that very well, at least from what I've seen, is Kat. Because
she's amazing. Yeah.
She,
Kat,
like,
McNamara, yes. Yeah, from Shadowhunters.
Yeah.
Sure. She's phenomenal.
She's amazing. And she, like, came in, like, the first time I ever met her. I don't know if I told you the story or not.
No,
but it was my birthday, and we had the Shadowhunters after show for season one. She comes in. She just saw on Twitter that it was my birthday. She brings in a dozen cupcakes from this gourmet, like, place with all different types.
Yeah.
And she just sits in front of me. She's like, happy birthday. And, like, literally, I was obviously a fan of hers, but she didn't really know who I was. But she, like, did her research. She followed me on Twitter and, like, saw it was my birthday and brought the cupcakes. Like, that is what, I mean, not saying that you have to go out and just buy things for people, but, like, just having sentiment, knowing that
it's not a bad strategy, though.
Exactly. But going into things where you're like, okay, I'm going to be nice to everyone, because everyone is trying to, you know, not only be there for me and, like, make me look good, but I want to make sure that I'm appreciative of everyone around me, building me up. So
absolutely.
I think that's very, very, very important. But a question that I also had was, whenever you're going into a show, obviously there's a lot of things that you have to do your research on. Mm-hmm. But whenever you go in, is there a moment where you can somewhat be, like, do you have everything set in your mind of how you want everything to look? Or are you pretty open-minded when you go in, because you know that the actors are going to have ideas and, like, producers?
Yeah, I mean, it is a collaborative medium, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's the idea is that the cinematographer knows more about lighting than I do. You know, it's like I can speak his or her language, but I can, you know, set up shots. That's part of my job. But if the cinematographer has a concept and, you know, thinks it might be better shot in this direction, so that direction, you know, you have to be open to that. And also, you know, down to people, the production assistants, somebody, if you're creating an environment where everybody feels that they can speak their mind, you know, and I'm not the type of person who just wants to do it my own way or the highway.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to, you know, have, I think, very good ideas, and I tend to essentially stick to the plan.
Yeah.
Because in TV, again, as I said earlier, it's so it's shot so quickly that a lot of times if an actor has an idea, I may think it's a terrific idea, but it's like, if they want to walk in a totally different part of the room that we don't have time to light,
right,
that's unfortunately not a great idea.
So, like,
I have to unfortunately say no to those types of things. But ideas that don't slow the production down, that make the show better, you know, again, whether they're the assistant director, the cinematographer, the production designer, the production assistant, you know, than anyone who walks on the set who feels free to just sort of chime in. It's like, there's no harm in having ideas and expressing them, because if you let your ego get in the way, then the work suffers.
That's so true. I feel like that is the downfall of some actors, is they get this ego and they go in, and even people who are directors and stuff, they get, like, this mm-hmm. idea where they think, okay, well, I'm in charge, and then you lose the creative force because you're kind of so caught up in yourself that you forget that this is, like, a team effort. So I love that you were telling me it's, like, a team effort. It's a collaborative thing.
Yeah.
Because it's a show that everyone has their own ideas, but being able to kind of come together and everyone kind of know where you're going and moving forward, and having the person as the director being able to call the shots, but also being able to have an open mind, I think that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, otherwise go write a novel.
Right.
You know? I mean,
yeah.
You know, go paint a painting. You know, go sit in a home studio and play all the instruments and multitrack and release your own songs. I mean, there's ways of doing art solo.
Right.
This isn't one of them.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's exactly. Like, you gotta work that out.
I totally agree. So let's get ahead and get into this. I am obsessed with show Pretty Little Liars. Here's a photo of you and Tyler Blackburn, who plays Caleb Rivers. What was that experience like working on that show? Because that is just one of the most iconic shows out there. For at least me, being a millennial, this is like one of my absolute favorite shows.
It is. And I was such a fanboy of the series by the time I got to direct it. And also that photo is also from Ravenswood, the spinoff, which
so
I
you
also
did that
directed.
As well.
Yes.
No way. Okay, so, that's awesome.
So yeah, it was great to work with Tyler on both of those shows, actually. You know, and Marlene King and Oliver Goldstick and Joe Daugherty, the three sort of masterminds behind the series. Yeah. They're all brilliant. And anyone who hasn't seen Pretty Little Liars has a preconceived notion of what it is.
Right.
And I always have to tell people, don't go into it thinking you know what it is, because it's going to be so much better than you even think it's possible.
Right.
You know, and it's really compelling. And I was a fanboy of the show. So by the time I got into it, I actually had seen most of the episodes prior to mine, and then meeting Marlene, and she's just a terrific, terrific showrunner.
I would love to meet her someday. She just seems so.
Yeah,
so amazing.
She's very inspiring. She's an inspiring person. She inspires the people around her, and she, and I was actually almost going to direct a Famous in Love. I wanted to do it, but it conflicted with a Magicians episode that I was directing. So, unfortunately,
well, you never know. I'm thinking there's going to be a season two.
Yes,
so.
We hope again. Yeah. I hope so. Season two. We want Shadowhunters. Season three. We now know there's a Magician season three, which I'm very happy about.
That's awesome.
So that's great. But
that
yeah, exciting. Hopefully we'll hear announcements of other good things soon.
That's right. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
All the shows are doing
well,
so successful.
You know, by May, upfronts and all that.
Yeah.
It should all get worked
definitely.
Out. Yeah.
And actually, a show that I would love to see you direct is one of my favorite shows on Freeform, Stitchers. I think that you
would love
great
to direct Stitchers. Yeah, it's a great show. I've seen a couple.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like already in season three mode. Finally, it took them like months and months and months and months. And like, I think it was like 7 or 8 months after season two had already been aired that they finally decided to do season three. So they were having some kind of a, I guess, problem or seeing how other shows panned out to see if they got picked up for a season three. But I was like, seriously, that was the longest wait ever. I was like, come on. But they're finally in production again. So I would love that.
That's fantastic.
See an
episode of
that. Yeah,
that
would be incredible.
Absolutely. Is there an after show for that one?
Yes.
Do you do that one as well?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I love that show. It's such a good, like the relationship between characters and just I like how it's so techie type of a show and it brings it interesting because a lot of things are, you know, just like murder mysteries or like, you know, Famous in Love is about being famous, but this is about how like these people like go into this lab and like stitch into memories of dead people. It's very like off the wall and different, but
yeah,
I love it. It's
great.
Awesome.
Yeah. And a shout out to my friend John Newby, who's the cinematographer on that show.
Wow.
Yeah, he and I worked together on a couple of projects, so he's a great guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So for Pretty Little Liars, like, how were you approached when asked to direct an episode?
It's, you know, the relationships, networking and relationships are always a key element in this situation. And I think I had met Marlene through social media, interestingly enough, because she was a fan of a show that I had been directing called The Following. And also I had been directing many, many episodes of The Vampire Diaries, you know, which at the time, you know, a lot of the audiences were crossover audiences. So I think just it was Marlene who contacted my agent. There was an opening in season five and said, you know, we want to invite Josh to Rosewood. So I'm like, yeah,
you're
where's
like,
my
let's
ticket?
Do it.
Where's my ticket?
Where's my ticket to Rosewood?
And at the time, that was also the time they were doing Ravenswood. So I also got invited to New Orleans, which is where we shot
that's
show.
That's where they filmed that?
Yeah.
Wow, they didn't film that on the Warner Brothers lot.
They did not.
Wow.
No. They got really good tax incentives in New Orleans, which was interesting because, you know, Marlene and Oliver Goldstick, who wrote my episode of Ravenswood, like they were really just dividing their time between L.A. and New Orleans for a few months. So that was interesting for them. But yeah. Oh, you know, world as you well know, world of tax incentives.
That's right.
There's so many. I mean, I rarely shoot shows in L.A. anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there's very little TV, at least the TV that I direct, that gets shot here.
So you have to just like, here's your home base, and then you get to go out.
Yeah,
to
you get the
cool
job
places.
Here, and then they send you out of town for a month to do the job.
That's so fun,
you know,
though.
But
I mean,
it's fun,
like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously you're working the entire time, but it's kind of like a nice little change of scenery every time you get to go to different places.
It is. And I've fallen in love with certain cities like Vancouver,
yeah.
where I've worked a lot, and Toronto, and Atlanta, and New York, actually. That's a blast.
That's awesome.
Because their tax incentives are quite good.
Yeah.
but yeah, I did a show in Charleston, South Carolina, which was really beautiful. It's a great town. And Chicago was fun.
Wow.
Cold,
so you've
but
been
fun.
Quite a bit of different places.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
and
cool.
Again, I think I can count on less than one hand the shows that I've directed in LA. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So I guess would Pretty Little Liars be like the only one that you've shot in L.A.?
One of the three.
Few.
The other one,
oh, okay.
I also shot Twisted, I shot in L.A.
Okay, yes.
Which was another ABC Family, or, mm-hmm. you know, the artist formerly known as ABC Family
yeah.
show. I did a show here called Ringer, which mm-hmm. was on the CW
oh, okay.
for about 5 seconds with Sarah Michelle Gellar
playing
identical twins.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then the other show I did here was called State of Affairs, which was on briefly on NBC with Catherine Heigl Alfred Woodard. And that was a terrific show. I would have loved to do more of those, but that ended after 13. So
isn't it crazy how like some shows, you know, could make it so far and like for some reason it just doesn't quite get the numbers. Like it doesn't make sense, because I feel like that show with Catherine, like I feel like that could have really went on and been a great show.
Well, I think creatively it was on point. Yeah, Joe Carnahan, who created and was behind it, is brilliant. He's a brilliant director, creator, you know, filmmaker in general. And they really had their act together. But what's interesting is that, you know, as the years have progressed because of the television viewing numbers plummeting
mm-hmm.
because everybody's, you know, either watching it in different forms, streaming it, or mm-hmm. not watching it live. You know, the advertising budgets, you know, the advertisers aren't paying for the shows the way they used to.
Right.
You know? So the pressure on shows like State of Affairs or another show I did, Limitless, you know, the pressure from NBC and CBS, in terms of numbers, is much higher.
Yeah.
You know, whereas shows like on the CW or on cable, they can get lower numbers and still do very well because they hit a very specific demographic, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you millennials. And
right.
And you buy stuff. Keep buying stuff, because that's, you know, that's the key.
That's right. That
you know,
because right.
Because if you're buying the products that are being sold on those shows, the better, you know, it's you know,
exactly.
kind of easy formula. But yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I do love how Freeform has been, like, releasing seasons at a time on the app or making it easy to easily accessible, because they're kind of conforming to, okay, people are watching more online now, so if we're wanting numbers, let's kind of cater to those people as well. And I do feel like it is a whole millennial thing, because most people like to watch it on TV, but a lot of people are like, okay, now we want to just watch it on our screens wherever we go and have it right at your fingertips at all times. So I love how they're kind of like being like, all right, so we have to cater to these people now. And
well, and now that I think Gen Z, which I guess is the new...
That's the new one?
The new one. But they're not even going to have any nostalgia for the idea of waiting a 1 week to another week to watch a TV show.
That's so true.
I think that's going the way of vinyl records and CDs. And
yeah.
It's like one of those, it's sort of this 20th century concept that didn't quite make it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's going to be so interesting to see how that plays out, like, for Generation Z. Because we already like talk about millennials, but after a while, we're going to be kind of done and like the new generation's
taking
over.
Yeah. And they grew up, they never knew a world without the internet. They never knew a world without, you know, the joy of binge watching.
Right,
so, you know,
exactly.
It's like, you know, they have no idea, you know, how to listen. They won't even have, not to go crazy on this, but they won't even have the concept of music ownership that makes any sense to them. The idea that we used to even download, like, buy MP3s.
I know.
You know, it's like... That
crazy,
you know, it's like you just get your subscription service and you're.
I know exactly. Yeah. Everything's like subscription based now. Okay, I do want to talk about Vampire Diaries, because my friend Sam Davidson, who you've obviously met many times here at AfterBuzz Studios, has said that you are known for your like steamy scenes. Like she's like, he's known for these like steamy scenes, like whenever like a Haleb kiss for Pretty Little Liars, Vampire Diaries, that you're known for these kind of scenes. So like, what is it like directing Nina? Because she is just such a great actress.
She's amazing. Yeah. She's you know, and she got her she got her break on Vampire Diaries. She was 19 years old, you know. Wow. So she really like grew up on the show. But even when I directed her in the first season, and I mean, I've directed 11 episodes. So from the very first one to the very last one, the common denominator was she somehow always got it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, she was on Degrassi before that. I mean, as a teenager, I think that's where she learned the basic sort of set life, set principles. But, you know, you just meet those people who just, she just instinctively knew how to act, and she knew, she was comfortable in front of the camera. She knew about, you know, ways of making the medium of film, TV, mm-hmm. you know, work in her favor. And she was also very brilliant, I think, in terms of her social media and her self-marketing. And definitely. I just think she just sort of had the whole thing figured out.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, exactly, you know, so it was very, very, it was great directing her. She's a very professional individual, yes.
And here's a photo. Oh my gosh, this is a great photo. This was like very professionally shot, like this photo.
Well, this was, because this was actually on set. I love the lighting on this, because David Harrington, the cinematographer of Shadowhunters, I mean, he had lit the set, and then we just took a photo in the light.
That's great.
His light. So it's,
I just love Alberto. I think, like, directing him must be so much fun, just because he's so funny, and like being able to kind of direct someone into saying lines certain ways, or just like mm-hmm. being in those scenes with him. He's like such like a nervous talker in the show, Simon is, and just like he blurts things out, and just watching his transition from becoming like this nerdy kind of band kid to mm-hmm. like this vampire and trying to stand up for himself and be like become more masculine or whatever. Just watching his journey has been hilarious. And I think he's an incredible actor.
He's incredible. Yeah. Another one who just gets it, you know?
Yeah.
And, in terms of Alberto, I just, you know, it's, not to spoiler alert, the season, mid-season finale, the winter finale that I directed, yes. you know, he was basically, and you know, covered in blood the entire time.
Yeah.
So, you know, he, but a very good sport, you know, but, he's great. Yeah.
That's amazing. And then here's a photo with you and Dom.
Yes, Dom.
So whenever he's on set, does he speak like with his American accent?
Oh, that's an interesting story. So I honestly, when I met Dom, you know, because I met him at the read-through, and then I met him and I was directing him, and he's, you know, absolute sweetheart, great guy.
Yeah.
He was, you know, this British accent. American accent. He had an American accent during the read-through and an American accent on set, not just when the camera was rolling, but, like, would walk around, you know, talking like Jace the entire time. And then the first week of shooting, everybody was getting together. It was just a party, somebody's birthday party. I forget who it was, but we were there, and it kind of shocked me when I saw Dom that night, and he was in that thick. He had his thick British accent.
Yeah.
So, he's amazing at turning off that accent.
Yeah.
B, it's like, what's interesting to me is that he keeps it all day on set as American, and then on the weekend, it's you know, it's totally gone. So
that's crazy. Because I think whenever he came in for our after show, he was very thick British accent, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. was telling us how on set he does walk around and speak in American accent just so he doesn't find himself slipping into it during the taping.
Yeah, it's smart.
And
it's very smart. Yeah, no, and he was so seamless that he fooled even me.
Yeah,
I mean, had I just Googled it, I would have seen that. But I was thinking of other things,
okay, what is a pair of batons?
Yeah, a pair of batons. Yeah, I know. And I was like, So that there was a bit of a moment there for me.
That is so funny.
When I just realized, he's British. Yeah.
So something that I wanted to tell you, and Sam actually, I was with her yesterday, and she was saying this would be something great to ask him.
Sure.
Is the fact that you do have to, like with a lot of the shows you're doing, you're catering to millennials. So what is that process like? Is there sometimes where you're thinking, okay, like, how am I going to portray this for this younger generation to get it? And then also having to constantly kind of evolve with your projects, knowing that you have to kind of keep up with the craziness of millennials.
I just think it's about being being informed. You know, you have to be aware of what's going on in the pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's and I thanks to shows like, you know, Popcorn Talk and After Buzz. And, you know, I've been on a show called Pop Trigger a few times. There's like a lot of really interesting shows that are out there that are very much commenting on pop culture and allowing, you know, for me, it's just trying to sort of keep keep aware of the rapidly changing trends, you know, in not just in, you know, politics and what's going on the world stage, but also in terms of entertainment and in terms of, you know, basically how millennials are reacting and how they're talking to each other and what they're talking about. And, you know, so it's definitely, I mean, I feel like I would say I'm in touch with my inner teenager, you know, because I just definitely loved that period of life. And yeah. I love the fact that a lot of these shows tap into that kind of epic emotion that you feel at that age, you know, the sort of heightened.
Yeah. Everything is heightened. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, once you get that, I think that's the basic principle. Then I think that, you know, creating entertainment, you know, understanding that you have to basically make it as memorable and as epic as possible, you know, because otherwise, you know, this is a very noisy environment. There's so much content out there. You really have to have something that not only stands out, but also finds its way into the pop culture. You want people to be making, you know, GIF files and sharing scenes, yeah. And you want people to sort of, you know, quote your main characters and find, you know, and ship them. You want, you know, as many ships as possible, right, that come out of your show.
The more ships you have, yeah, the more. Yeah,
I mean, I think that's one of the funniest things that's come out of like millennial culture is the idea that now writers who are creating TV shows have to be very aware of how they name their characters. Because the people who are going to be the love interests or the potential love interests, you need to make sure that it isn't a really awful shipper name.
Right. You're going to have good names that merge, you know.
That merge, exactly. Yeah. So that's yet another part of the writing process that millennials have kind of
even thought of that, but that is so true.
Yeah.
But for people who are maybe watching from back home who are not, they don't have the same resources that we have out here in LA, or maybe they're just off like me. Like 3 years ago, I was in Missouri, in the middle of Missouri. I was trying to do everything I could to do in little films and little commercials and stuff. But let's say someone wants to be a director and they are living in Missouri or like somewhere far away like that. What are like some steps that they can start taking to kind of move forward to that direction to maybe someday become a director?
Oh, absolutely. Well, as I said earlier on, number one, make content, make stuff, make, and when you make stuff, start with short films if you feel the need to sort of, you know, get your feet wet. But if there's any way you can put together resources to make a film, a full-length feature film, that's still, I think, the best introduction into the industry. And I think that with all the equipment that's available, you know, in Missouri or Kansas or Pennsylvania or you know, the Czech Republic, you know, wherever you are, there's always ways at this point to create a film make it with people that you trust, you know, treat it as a collaborative art form, which it is. Find the people around you that are better at their jobs than you would be if you did those jobs. You know, find the better cinematographer, find a better editor, find a better, you know, composer. Get these people together, you know, find a project and make sure that the material you have is very, very strong, you know, and that's going to be the thing that makes you stand out. So there's no reason you can't make stuff. I mean, and if features aren't your thing, well, you know, you can make spec commercials or spec music videos or spec. I highly always advise against web series because there really is no market for them. Mm-hmm. You know, the good news about a feature film is that you can still potentially sell it.
Right.
You know, and I always tell people don't make spec TV series because that's not how they're sold. You know, make a film and let Hollywood have the idea to turn it into a TV series.
Yeah.
You know, that seems to be the way they do it. And then I think at some point you got to make the move. I mean, you know, I mean, there are a lot of great regional filmmakers, but they're very, very much regional, you know, and if that's what you want to do, if you want to, like, you know, if you can pay your bills, whether you're independently wealthy or you have the ways and means, or you have a really good day job and you're able to make film on as a hobby, then that's great. But if your ultimate desire is to make a living at it, then I really don't know how you would do it in places like Missouri. I feel like you would have to be in LA,
right,
at the very least New York,
yeah,
you know, because that's where the jobs are originating.
Right. And like, I know with Missouri, they've had like some people kind of go to them now ever since Winter's Bone. You remember
yes,
that
Winter's
movie?
Bone. Yes, absolutely.
Jennifer Lawrence, that was like one of her big breaks. And that was a big deal for, like, I was actually supposed to be freaking on that set, like, just in the background a little bit, but I was so mad. I was like in a show and I couldn't make it to that day. And I was like, I could have like maybe had my face shown on screen for a little bit.
Oh, that's all right.
But no, but I think it was really cool because a lot of people got the chance to work on that set back in Missouri. And then whenever that thing kind of blew up, a few of them kind of got to move here. So I think it is really cool, guys. You can start off where you are, make some content, and you never know what's going to happen with that content. And that might be your ticket there to,
absolutely,
to come out here.
Absolutely. And even if it doesn't break you through, just do another one. Keep doing it. You know, it's like, it's not that, this is the best time in history to be making film content because it has never been less expensive to find equipment that makes what you're shooting look professional.
Right.
You know, I mean, films have been shot on iPhones recently that played at, you know, major film festivals and got major distribution.
Wow.
So, you know, it's like there's really no reason, there's no excuse to not be making content because you can't be that person that walks around talking how brilliant you are. Because Hollywood doesn't care.
Exactly.
They just want to see results.
Right.
You know.
And building up your resume is important, and having those projects that you're able to work on, that's going to help build up your content, build up your resume. That way, whenever you do make the move, you can have stuff under your belt to be like, here, this is what I've done.
Yes.
And I love that. Something that I've wanted to ask is, obviously for actors, we have like managers or agents who submit us through Actors Access. Is there any type of thing like that for directors, or is it mostly just by like talking to people and who you know? But do they have like a set thing where, do you have like an agent or manager who reaches out to people to say, hey?
Well, there's less and less of that. There used to be what they called open directing assignments, and they would interview directors for a project. But that has pretty much gone by the wayside. So it comes down to networking. It comes down to who you know. But I mean, for me, the way I get jobs, the way I seek out jobs, it's all through relationships. It's all through word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And then agents are also, you know, relying on relationships they have with studio executives and network executives and people who then call other people who have worked with me before and can vouch for me. So that's the system. As for actors, you know, the other thing I always say is sometimes if you want to build up your reel and your resume as an actor, you can't do this as a director, obviously, but you could move to Atlanta. You could move to if you're Canadian, in any way, shape or form, then you should be in Vancouver or Toronto because there's so much local casting that goes on for all these national TV shows. So you can really get some great credits by living in one of the tax incentive markets.
I know. I'm like, what am I doing here in LA, guys? I got to go. I got to, you know, because I've had friends who've done that, who've actually been in LA and like flown for auditions and stuff, and they get something big, and then that's their ticket in because they went to those smaller cities that hire.
It's a smaller pond.
Yeah,
it's a smaller pond, and the thing is, like for a show like The Vampire Diaries that went 8 seasons, you know, think about it. In each episode, if they had 4 or 5 guest cast, all of whom they wanted to, for the most part, cast out of Atlanta for budgetary reasons. You know, they burned through hundreds of actors that way. And I say burn through as in, if you put an actor in a show as a character, technically you're not supposed to ever use that actor again in your series.
Yeah.
You know, because people are like, hey, wasn't that the guy from season 2 who was the thing? You know.
And that's happened a few times in shows that I've loved, and I'm like, wait a minute. And I find it, I screenshot it, like circle their face, and they're like, oh no, we just used them because they were here locally. You know, and I'm like, wait, no, that would have been great for the story because this guy's in the background and he was in season 1 being like, you know, and I feel like that is so
well,
funny.
Good on you for noticing.
Thank you. I do that. I'm so into shows and I like screenshot and like circle them and like, it's crazy.
That's awesome.
But wrapping it up here a little bit, let's talk about your future. What is like a goal that you have? I know you were saying you'd love to work in movies as well.
Yes.
Is that like one of the main goals that is unaccomplished so far that you'd want to like move on to like a big studio movie, or what is your main goal?
My main goal is to, I'm writing a film right now that, I've got some independent money behind and my goal is to finish writing that and direct that movie this year.
Wow.
You know, and it's very much in the vein of it's a romance. It's got some science fiction elements to it, but it's a story about you know, basically about millennials. So it's definitely something that comes out of the TV work that I've done, but is very much an independent film in spirit. So
awesome.
So yeah, and the goal is to, you know, I love TV and I want to keep playing in the world of television, but for me, I need to express myself through cinema, you know, at this point in my life, because that's just, it's been the as I said, the childhood dream. So I'm working on that.
That is so exciting. Well, I'm excited to see that for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Who's like a dream actor that you'd love to have in a movie of yours?
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, people like, you know, people blow me out of the water, like Shailene Woodley. You know, someone like Shailene Woodley, when I saw Fault in Our Stars, which I absolutely loved, I was just like, okay, that's just, you know, brilliant.
I know.
And you just see somebody like that and it's like, yeah, I'd be very curious to work with her and see, you know, see what she's capable of, because I think she's probably capable of amazing things.
She definitely is. And it's so funny. I actually, so many people have like, at least three or four, not a lot, but there's been people who've come up to me being like, wait, you look like you could be Shailene Woodley's brother.
Oh.
And I'm like, wait, I don't see it, but like, and then they'll look up a photo of her on their phone and like,
oh,
show me.
Oh, now that you
me.
Say
and
that, I think that's not a bad casting choice at
like,
all.
Let's
that's,
do
that's,
it.
That's not. That's really not a bad casting choice.
That would
choice.
Be so cool.
I would buy that you had the same biological parents.
That would be
absolutely.
So cool. Yeah, someone's told me that before. And I'm like, all right, we'll get her on the phone. Let's
yeah,
work
somebody
it out.
Hired Dakota as Shailene's brother.
That's
yes.
right. And like, okay, so I know you want to work in movies, but for a TV show, let's say that there's like, what is one show that's going on right now that you would just love to direct an episode of?
That's a good question. I would love to do, well, This Is Us. I love, has any have you
okay,
seen
yeah.
This Is Us? That's a fantastic show. And I, because from the emotional side of things and, you know, and from the sci-fi geek in me, you know, I love, you know, I'd enjoy doing like The Expanse, mm-hmm. you know, it's another show on Sci-Fi Channel that I really like. I enjoy, you know, of course we all dream big and I'd love, you know, Game of Thrones, of course would be, or a show like that would be awesome because you have so much money and time to really do epic cinema in a TV form. So there's that, but, and there's I think Outlander is still going. I think shows like that are fun. And
or would you ever do something like The Walking Dead or something just absolutely like just crazy?
I mean, The Walking Dead is, you know, it's a very closed system right now in terms of the, you know, they have their core group of directors, so it's a hard kind of group to get into at this point, but it's a very, very cool type of show. And I'd like to be involved. If it was a show like that, I'd want to be involved, you know, early on and just be you know, be part of creating the world, because that's the thing I enjoy the most, you know, in terms of as being a director, is, you know, creating, you know being part of that vision of what something should look like, you know.
Right.
And now The Walking Dead is so well established, it would just be more like playing in the playground,
right?
You know, which I would love.
Would be so much
be
fun.
Fun,
but
yeah.
I think it is cool because whenever, like with TV shows, they switch out directors, which is interesting, which I've just recently, within the past 2 years, kind of figured that out, because I just think, oh, they probably have one director from start to end. But the thing with movies is you are able to be there and create from start to finish.
Exactly.
So I could see why that would be a big dream of yours, because you are hands-on the entire process from start to finish.
Right.
And that would be very exciting.
And what it also does, and this goes back to what I was saying earlier about filmmakers who are in Missouri or Kansas or even in LA or whatever, aspiring filmmakers, the key is that is the best showcase for your individual view of the world, mm-hmm. and your take on filmmaking, and you know, I hate how people use this term, but they use the term unique voice, mm-hmm. you know, and it's even worse when they use the term voicey. But what they're meaning is that if something's voicey, then the filmmaker who made the content has something that's worth looking at. You know, it's worth evaluating them as an artist and you know, funding projects for them to be able to express themselves in that way. So I think it's very important, I think, to make sure that you have unique content that you created.
Yeah.
Because again, that's the best leverage you have in this town.
Definitely. Guys, that is a great note to end on. Literally learn your lines and have
Like, be nice.
Create, be nice. Learn lines. Make unique content.
Unique content.
And just go out there. And it's one of those things you just have to just throw yourself out there. And whether it be wherever you are in the world, just taking those first initial steps to build up your resume or just build up your experience. Just explore your creativity. It's just so important. So you guys, make sure you do that. Again, where can everyone find you on social media?
Oh, yes. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, The Joshua Butler. If somebody can explain why I need Snapchat, I might do that too. But
you should.
I'm a little confused. Yeah, you millennials and your Snapchat. No,
it took me a while to join Snapchat. But.
Yeah, but every other social media, you can find me. Yeah,
awesome. Well, you guys can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at Mr. Dakota T. Jones. If you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure to give us a 5-star rating. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to give us a big thumbs up. We love you guys so much. Thank you for tuning in. We will talk to you next week for Season 1, Episode 6 of Millennial Hollywood.
We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.